Hello and welcome to the VM Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover, and this is a special episode, VMTN Subscription. It's the topic of the week. Here we go. Today is a special one. I'm going to be interviewing a couple of people in the virtualization community, asking their opinion and some questions that they feel are important about this recent discussion about the VMTN subscription. Today, my first guest is Josh Atwell. How are you doing, Josh?
I'm doing well, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm awesome. So, Josh, can you tell everyone a quick bio about yourself?
Sure. My name is Josh Atwell. I'm a systems administrator at a relatively large corporation in RTP, North Carolina, and I'm blogger, VCP, VCAP, DCD, and currently working on the DCA, hopefully later this month. So, and if anybody follows me on Twitter, I'm pretty active on there, Josh_Atwell.
Awesome. And I'll definitely put a link to your Twitter feed in the podcast notes. So, Josh, do you think that a VMTM subscription is a good idea, and how would you use it?
I think it's a fantastic idea. I've been advocating for a few years now to different VMware SEs and partners that I've worked with, primarily because I have been on the certification track after completing the install, configure, and manage course. I was kind of left working in production in order to learn, in order to prepare for the VCP. And then at the time, the VMTN had just been axed, and I wasn't able to get in on that. So I was really limited on that. Eventually, I was able to obtain my VCP, and then I've been really heavily using it in my preparations for my VCA piece. It's kind of critical with all the new components that VMware has introduced over the last few years. Simply having ESXi or the free old GSX, the VMware server available, just doesn't cut it with the requirements on all the features that are now available. So it's been kind of difficult keeping my lab up and getting it and all the time spent on that.
How much would you need? Because, these programs would surely mimic the production counterparts, and they would be driven off of licensing, and let's just say, CPU and VRAM, and let's, at least start with vSphere. How much would you need to, really do that correctly?
Sure. Well, right now I'm currently running about 20 gig in a desktop on workstation, running three hosts, each with very minimal memory resources. And for a lot of things, like HADRS, that's worked out. But I'm already finding that as I start looking at features like Site Recovery Manager and vCloud Director, I'm already low on resources. And I look at the hardware that people are getting right now with the cost of memory. You can get the little HP microservers with 8 gig of RAM for, $300. You get a couple of those, you can really start to do a little bit more. So I think ideally it'd be somewhere along the lines of at least having four ESXi hosts and at least 48 gig of RAM or somewhere along those lines, just to give people an opportunity to, have a machine that can host some VMs, be able to put the supporting infrastructure like your vCloud Director server, your virtual center server inside the virtual environment and make that available. And of course, make it to where the VMTN subscription allows you to test and try out all of the different features that VMware now offers, which, is getting bigger and bigger every year.
What issues do you see with VMware having this type of program, and would you have any recommendations on how to address those issues?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. I really see two primary issues. Number one, we recognize that there's going to be some work on their part in order to get this program turned up if they decide to move forward with it, which based on Duncan's post yesterday, it looks like they're definitely talking about it and working on it. And number two, concerned about people misusing the VMTN subscription. With the first one, I think that can be kind of addressed primarily by treating VMTN subscribers as customers and using the existing customer resources and tools that they have. In fact, I blogged last night about the new My VMware interface that they're working on. It's a perfect tie-in. I think they can just use existing license deployment, existing download structure, existing, you know, customer interface and license management for this, but by having a specific license type that they utilize. And on the misuse side, you know, there's people misusing the products now as they are. There's people, you know, using their production keys at home, which puts their corporations and their businesses and their production environments at risk. You've got people that are generating multiple email addresses in order to get downloads. You've got people that are getting downloads and software from, you know, I wouldn't say partners per se, but people that have access, you know, to that, those materials. And so there's already a great deal of circumvention happening. And I think with the program being in, you'll see a lot less of that. There will be some people out there that are going to misuse it, but, you know, those people are going to be misusing stuff anyway. And chances are those are people that are currently using Hyper-V or some other, or the current free stuff, and they're just looking to try it out. And my bet is it won't be long after that they've tried this stuff out that they're like, yeah, we need to pay for this and get this going. Yeah, I just think it's going to be a really small group of people that would do something like that.
Josh Atwell, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Rick. Have a great one.
All right, my next guest is Kelly Colwell. How you doing, Kelly?
Good, Rick. How are you today?
Hey, I'm rocking. It's Veeam Speed. It's another busy day. I guess it's Wednesday again. But Kelly, you've been on the podcast before, but go ahead and give a quick intro of yourself so everybody knows.
Sure. I'm a solution architect with Interworks Incorporated. We're a full-service provider based out of Oklahoma. I basically handle virtualization and storage. Happy to be here and happy to help in whatever way you can.
Great, Kelly. So do you think a VMTN subscription is a good idea, and how would you use it?
I think it is because not a lot of people, or at least not everybody, have access to NFR licenses. Software developers may not need every product. They may not need access to 100 CPUs of something. So it gives a good way for everyday folks or developers or bloggers or whatnot who may not have NFRs, who may not have the expert licensing or that type of thing to be able to play with the products and see what's coming, see what's out there and you know, learn and develop their skills with it.
Well, if you had this type of program, you know, in your case, maybe, for example, how much would you need, right? It's all driven by licensing, CPUs, VRAM. How much would you think would be enough for you?
Well, I mean, if we're talking just home labs, I don't know very many people who have more than, you know, 4, 6, or 8 CPUs potentially in their home labs. There are exceptions, but, you know, a few CPUs here, functionality for vSphere, maybe some Vue, you know, just dabbling a little bit in VCOps and things like that. Just sort of something to get you a taste and a feel of what everything will do without going overboard. You know, this would be good for a lab environment at work or lab environment at home. Definitely nothing that would maybe lend people to try to use it in a production environment, but just something the way people can play with it and really get a feel for what the technology is.
So do you see any issues that VMware may have with this program, and would you have any recommendations on how they could resolve it and protect themselves for any issues like the production crossover that you just mentioned?
Yeah, the production crossover is probably going to be the biggest thing, and then the next one, I could see maybe some type of attempted piracy or people trying to crack it or leak it out on the web somehow for other people to use. I don't know if there's something like the VRAM entitlement that can be checked on how it's being used or what kind of runtime, what kind of workload it's got on it. I don't know if that's a privacy invasion or what, but just some sort of check and balance to see what it's actually being used for, whether that be a key that's specifically tied to home IP addresses. I'm just thinking here that's obviously an odd solution, but something that would just be able to allow VMware to monitor the use, to track its distribution, you know, maybe a special sign-in for use, maybe it breaks itself every X number of days with a shutdown, just so that it, you know, it really proves that you're not using it in a production environment. There's a lot of different options, but I think the production one's going to be the biggest kicker.
Absolutely. Kelly Colwell, thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely. Have a good day, Rick.
And my next guest is Chris Wall. How you doing, Chris?
good. How about you, Rick?
Hey, I'm rocking it. So, Chris, you've been on the podcast before, but can you give a quick overview of yourself, quick bio?
Sure. I'm a dude in Illinois that does VMware stuff. So I do VMware engineering.
Nice. And that sounds like the bio I might have made up right before we started talking.
So, I liked it, so I'm using it.
Awesome, awesome. Do you think a VMTN subscription is a good idea? How would you use it, Chris?
Absolutely a good idea. I don't know why they got rid of it. I would use it for home lab type activities, such as when I was studying for the VCAP DCA, because the 60-day evaluation is good, but it really puts the pressure on you to have to rebuild it constantly.
Now, in terms of a home lab, right, how much would you need, right? Our licensing with VMware products is usually driven around CPU sockets and VRAM now. You know, what would you envision is enough for what you would need, you know, with a VMTN subscription product?
Sure. For me personally, I think one socket per host is pretty reasonable for a home lab. I don't think many people are buying dual socket home lab servers, although I may be wrong. So I think if you could get two sockets total, one, you know, two servers with one socket each with a modest amount of RAM, maybe 16 to 32 gigs, should serve all of my needs.
What issues do you see with this type of program, and what do you think VMware could do to resolve it, if you have any of those types of recommendations?
Well, what I think of as a modest home lab, I think some SMBs could consider, you know, that would be good enough for maybe a remote office or maybe even their primary office. So I'd imagine you might have some people milking it for quote-unquote production uses. But, you know, same thing with the TechNet, you know, where they just kind of take that chance and assume the greater good of having people that know the technology and spread the word is worth a few bad eggs.
Chris Wall, thanks for being on the podcast.
Not a problem.
Okay, and my next guest is Michael Poor. How you doing, Michael?
Very well, thank you, Rick.
Michael, this is, I believe, your first time on this podcast, but could you give an overview of yourself, quick bio, so everyone knows who you are and all that?
Indeed, yes, it is my first time on this podcast. My name is Michael Poor, as you've already said. I'm a virtualization consultant based in the UK, working for a small consultancy called Virtual Clarity. I'm also a blogger. I blog at the site vspecialist.co.uk, along with a friend of mine by the name of Jeremy Bowman. And yeah, I've been doing that for a couple of years. I've been working with virtualization for 4 or 5 years now, I think. Also VXpert 2011, a virtualization lover, if you like.
Definitely so. So, Michael, as you know, we've been talking a lot this week about the VMTN subscription topic, and I've got a couple questions about that. The first is, do you think the idea of a VMTN subscription program is a good idea? And if so, how would you use it?
Well, it's certainly been trending well on Twitter. So if you go purely based on that, then it's got to be a good idea. But personally, I think it's a great idea. It's a must almost. I mean, Microsoft have their TechNet subscription, which I use, so that obviously, you know, so I have legitimate Microsoft licenses that I can use in my home lab, that I can use to learn with, to experiment with, that sort of thing. But, you know, it's something VMware used to have, and I think they should bring it back.
And how would you use it if the program was available?
Well, as I mentioned, I've got a home lab myself. It's various people have different setups. I have about three hosts. Sometimes I run virtual ESXIs, so nested ESXIs, if I need to for various things I'm looking into. And whilst obviously you can get 30-day evaluations, that sort of thing, or 60-day evaluations, it's always difficult having to do that again and again every 60 days to keep the products working.
In terms of licensing, if you could craft a, you know, let's just, you know, specifically, you know, talk about vSphere, how much, you know, licensing in terms of sockets and VRAM would you think you require?
That's quite a tricky question, really, because I suppose different people will be using it on different hardware. My own lab, the servers I use are actually the HP ProLiant microservers, and they're just dual-core single-socket servers. Now, other people potentially may be using slightly more powerful hardware. And I suppose the problem for VMware is that if they were to bring this back, what licensing level would they provide as part of this subscription? It's got to be quite tricky to work that out because there's such a variety of hardware now. Whereas back in 2007, when they closed off the original VMTN subscription, there was less difference in the hardware. Generally, you'd have a few multi-socket computers, but they were fewer and far between than they are now.
Would you have any specific recommendations around any issues like that that VMware could employ to avoid any issues?
I would say, not really. It wouldn't surprise me if VMware, if they did bring it back, if they limited it to a single socket. And potentially they might even limit the number of cores as well, because obviously what they've got to avoid people doing is using these licenses in a production environment, very much like the TechNet subscription. That's not designed for production use, and VMTN never was either. So obviously they've got to pitch it at the right level to make sure that people aren't going to use it for that.
Michael Poore, thanks for being on the show.
It's a pleasure, Rick. Thank you.
Okay, my next guest is Jason Perlow. Jason, how you doing?
Hey, man. What's up, dude?
Not much. So, Jason, can you give everyone a quick bio on yourself?
Sure. I'm senior technology editor for ZDNet, part of CBS Interactive, and I've been writing in the technology field for about 15 years, and I'm also a practicing virtualization specialist at a large systems integration firm.
Good stuff. So, Jason, do you think a VMTN subscription is a good idea? And if so, how would you use it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we just follow the whole TechNet MSDN model that Microsoft does, as a technology professional, it is extremely valuable to have access to this technology, not just on an early adopter basis with betas and such, but to have the production gold code to play with in home labs, because you don't want to be in a situation where, for example, I have a customer that, bought ESX5 licenses and I'm expected to implement it, in the next week, right after my equipment's racked and stacked. I've never touched ESX5 before. And, I'm only going to be playing with it, the free version of it this weekend when I get it loaded on my server. But I don't have licenses to fully test vMotion or anything like that, or Virtual Center or any of that kind of stuff. So it would be good as a professional to be able to prototype and learn, at least on a smaller scale, what you can expect to encounter in the enterprise.
In that situation, how much would you need? Okay, in today's world, that's CPU sockets, it's VRAM licensing. If you had to kind of throw a dart on a quantity, what would you need to do that with?
It's funny. When I asked VMware for some eval licenses myself because I wanted to review the product, and they say that the requirements would be two systems plus shared storage. So they're expecting, I believe, two socket server. I think I could go for two socket servers, probably. Would probably be fine. If we're going to be use NFS based VM kernel storage, for the vMotion piece.
Sure. Sure.
So, they could do this clouded. If you don't have the hardware. I mean, I could see them putting up. Why they couldn't put up some shared virtual infrastructure for professionals to, RDP into or something, with Citrix or whatever, just to play around with an environment that they could just, reset as needed, once or twice a day or whatever, just to so that if for people that are pursuing VCPs or need to prototype, you know, configurations and whatnot, they can do that.
Well, I think that's a great idea, and it's the first time that response is answered, but in that way. But I doubt it would be with Citrix.
Yeah, whatever remote access technology they would use. Yeah.
Lastly, Jason, what issues do you see with this program and that VMware might have, and would you have any recommendations on how they could protect themselves or resolve those issues?
Well, I mean, Microsoft seems to be doing pretty good, you know, with TechNet. I mean, they're giving professionals access to their full range of enterprise software, from operating systems to applications to everything. And I would assume VMware's concerns are that this would be used in the commercial environment, you know, if they gave away the VNTNs for, let's say, you know, $250 or $500 a year or whatever it's supposed to cost. I would assume it would be comparable to what Microsoft charges their TechNet customers, which I believe it's $250 or $500 or something along those lines, depending on the levels of subscription that you're at. So obviously they would have to be, you know, guaranteed in some way that they would only be used for non-production and non-commercial use by the professionals themselves. So,
Jason Perlow, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, man.
And my next guest is Justin Paul. How you doing, Justin?
Good, how are you?
Hey, I'm rocking. I know you quite well, but can you give a quick bio of yourself for everyone?
Blogger, do jpaul.me. Active beta tester for Veeam software, VMware evangelist, all that good stuff.
Good stuff. So Justin, do you think that the VMTN subscription is a good idea? And how would you use it?
Definitely think it's a good idea. I work for a partner, so I get access to partner licensing, so it doesn't affect me too much, but I've thought about it a little bit, and I can't imagine being able to test near the stuff I do if I wasn't a partner because of the VMTM not being there. So, I mean, if you don't work for a partner or some kind of an organization like that, I think that without it, it definitely limits exposure to a lot of the products that VMware offers.
Definitely. If you had some sort of program like this, you know, one of the next questions that comes up is licensing, and really that revolves around things like CPU sockets and VRAM. How much would you need in your situation?
Well, my lab has 5 hosts, dual CPU in each, and like 16 gig of RAM in each. So, I mean, you know, I wouldn't think that anyone would need more than 10 or 15 sockets, and I mean, usually probably no more than, I would think, 8 to 16 gig per VCPU or per CPU for RAM. Most people's labs aren't that complex, so that's probably even on the high side.
Sure. Now, with a program like this, you know, there might be problems that come up, right? Especially in terms to people using it with the intended purposes in mind. What issues do you see with this type of program for VMware, and what kind of suggestions or recommendations would you have for VMware to ensure that the program is successful?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be somebody that uses the licenses the wrong way, but if they have an expiration date, I mean, nobody that I know would set their job on a license that's going to expire in a year. So, I mean, a license that expires is probably a good idea. You know, other than that, I mean, just, you know, making sure that the people who do have access, you know, are upstanding, you know, actually work for a business. I mean, I would say that if it's just, you know, somebody who's registered off the website and is expecting to get all the keys, I don't think I would go quite that far in opening it up.
Fair enough. Justin Paul, thanks for being on the show.
Not a problem. Thank you.